Well, if you know anything about my wife, you know that she is probably one of the kindest, most sweet-spirited people on the face of the planet. Like, she's just perfect, at least for me, in every way possible. She's beautiful. She loves the Lord. She grew up in a preacher's home, and yet somehow being a PK, she didn't make some of the stupid mistakes that PKs do. I mean, I'm a PK, and I can't tell you many of my childhood stories because they're just not church appropriate. But for her, like, she was just an amazing lady. Now, just because she's so sweet-spirited and kind doesn't mean that she didn't have some enemies over the years. In fact, when she was in high school, there were a couple girls in particular that just gave her a really, really hard time, you know, the high school mean girl stuff. And because she was so kind, every once in a while she might have snapped back at him, but she could never find it in her heart to retaliate and get even. Now, Lindsay had a friend, though, named Angie, who was not quite as sweet-spirited, if you will, as Lindsay was. Which is what I love about Angie, for the record. And one day, Angie got so frustrated with how these girls were treating Lindsay that she decided to do something about it for her friend. So she went home that night, she grabbed a black vial of nail polish, and she came back to school the next morning, and she went to these two girls' lockers. Now, you guys remember the master locks that used to be on lockers back then? You beat me to it, right? So Angie took the black nail polish, and she decided to paint in all the white numbers on these girls' locker locks. And that's awesome, man. Like, and when Lindsay told me that story, I thought, only a girl. You know, like, guys, they could, like, chest bump, like, what, dude? But girls, they can, like, they come up with these plans. They can even be vicious. You know what I mean? You can be absolutely vicious. Now, for some of you, you might say that's cruel and unusual punishment. But for me, I call that being a best friend. And that's what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about friendship, one of the most essential and necessary avenues of love there is, one of the most neglected and abused avenues of love there is in our culture, the forgotten joy of friendship, the lost art of friendship, and the biblical importance of friendship. Every Tuesday and Thursday, we have a group of ladies that comes to our church and meets together, and they quilt together. Okay, it's like the Northeast Christian Church Quilting Club. And these ladies are awesome. I don't know a whole lot about quilting, to be honest, but every time I walk through the room while they're quilting, there has to be something else going on in the room besides quilting, because they're having a little too much fun. Like, someone needs to check what they're putting in their coffee or whatever. But this last picture here you're going to see is a quilt that they've been working on here recently, and it's very special to them because it's a memorial quilt to one of their friends named Doris. Now, Doris was a part of the quilting club for, you know, several years, but recently, a few months ago, she passed away. And man, Doris was just one of those personalities. If you talk to the ladies, they'll tell you that she could brighten up the room, she can make you laugh. I mean, just a little insight for you on who Doris was. Just this past year before she passed away, Doris decided to get on a plane and travel to Cuba. Now, she's 91 years old at the time. And yet, she got on a plane, went to Cuba because she wanted to take a few pictures of Cuba. That was Doris for you. Now, when Doris passed away, this quilt right here was the one she was working on. And the ladies knew it. So they asked Doris's daughter to bring in the piece of the quilt, and they're finishing Doris's quilt for her. And then they're going to give it back to her daughter as a keepsake. And why? Why, might you ask, would they do something like that? Well, it's because Doris is a friend. And that's what friends do. And can I let you in on a little secret about the quilting club? It's not really about the quilting at the end of the day. It's about the life-giving relationships that they've been able to forge with one another. And I'd go ahead and tell you right now, if you're a young person in here and you got a free hour on Tuesdays or Thursdays, go sit around a table with those ladies because you'd have a lot to learn from them. And it's not just quilting. Well, let me say it to you like this, and this is kind of the bottom line for our message today. Life is less about what you are doing and more about who you're doing it with. Let me say it to you again. Life is less about what you're doing and it's more about who you're doing it with. Studies have shown that there are few things more influential on our lives than the people we surround ourselves with. It's called peer pressure. It's called nature and nurture. Right? That's why I always tell young people, show me your friends, I'll show you your future, and the same gets true as you get older. In fact, studies have also shown that the quality of your life is directly correlated with the quality of your relationships. The happier people usually have the happier relationships. And you can ask just about anybody who's lived a lion's share of life, and they'll tell you that the things they valued most in life haven't necessarily been their achievements or accomplishments or the vacations or trips they went on, but it's been the people they've gotten to do all that with, the people who they've gotten to invest love into, the people who will carry on their legacy long term. And you know what? Just to put some eternal perspective into the entire discussion, one day we're all going to have to stand before God. In that moment, God is going to ask us one particular question. How did you love the people I put closest to you? You see, even for God, life is a whole lot less about what you're doing and a whole lot more about who you're doing it with and how you're doing it with them. Now, in the 66-book library that we have called the BIBLE, there is one book, one document in here specifically that talks more about friendship than maybe any others. And I want to do a survey of what this book has to say about it and just kind of flesh out for you some of the principles. So if you've got your Bible with you, you can turn to Proverbs chapter 17. We're going to be in the book of Proverbs, Proverbs 17. Now, there are a lot of places we could go to talk about friendship. We could look at some good friendships in the Bible, like David's and Jonathan's or Paul and Barnabas's, but this particular book right here and some of the principles that it throws down are just so relevant and just so cutting to right exactly where our culture is today that I wanted to focus in on Proverbs in specific. Now, while you're turning there, let me explain to you a little bit about Proverbs because it's a little bit of a different book. In fact, when you read Proverbs, don't think book. Don't think story. Don't think narrative. Proverbs is what we would call wisdom literature. It's wisdom literature. It's like a bunch of speeches attached together with really, really wise maxims that are meant to make you better at life on God's terms. In fact, wisdom literature acts like case law. It gives you really, really practical, everyday examples that point to broader kingdom or broader principles of wisdom that you can enact in your life. So I'll give you an example for this. Here's a relational proverb that gives you a practical example that points beyond itself to a more important principle. Proverbs 27:14. Whoever blesses his neighbor with a loud voice, rising early in the morning, will be counted as cursing. Now that's Bible, y'all. Okay, that's Bible. Raise your hand in here right now if you are a morning person. All right, a lot of you. Raise your hand in here if you are not a morning person. Now, keep your hands raised if you're not a morning person and you live with a morning person. Here's your verse. Right here. Memorize it. Better yet, have your spouse memorize it, right? Maybe that'll knock some... Now, this doesn't work with a two-year-old when they wake up at 6 a.m. in the morning. You know, trust me on that. It doesn't work with them, but it might work with your spouse. Now, you get the point here? Get the point? It's a practical, everyday life example. Practical example. That points beyond itself to a broader kingdom principle. Now, what's the kingdom principle? Well, I have no idea, right? No. The kingdom principle is no matter how well-intentioned your actions are, if you're not considerate, they won't be received, right? So you got to be considerate. All right, now the Proverbs are speckled, just littered with examples just like this about friendship. And so that's what I want to unpack with you today. Four principles in specific. Now, this is going to be a very content-heavy message. We're going to have a lot of points, a lot of sub-points, and we're going to go through a lot of Proverbs. So some of you might want to take notes, get your pencils ready, because we're going to talk about a lot. Or for others of you who want to just listen and have the notes take home with you, I've put my outline on the app this week underneath the bulletin tab. So if you open up the Northeast Christian Church app and you click on the bulletin tab, at the very bottom underneath the bulletin is my outline for today. You might find it helpful. All right, here's the first point. Point number one that we find in the Proverbs about friendship. Good friends are absolutely necessary. Good friends are absolutely necessary. Proverbs chapter 17, verse 17. The author writes, "A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity." Now, I want you to compare what the author says here about both a friend and a brother. How often is a friend there in your life? All times, as a friend loves at all times. But how often, on the contrary, is a brother there in your life? Well, he says not all times. A brother's there, especially during times of adversity. Now, that may not be true for your brother or your sister. You know, you may have a brother or sister who's like a friend, and they're there for you always. But what the writer of Proverbs is pointing out here is that more often than not, friends are more present in your life. You spend more time with your friends. That's not to degrade family love. Family love is important. Family loyalty is important. Your family will step up in big ways when you need them the most, no doubt about it. But just because your family is loyal to you and just because your family loves you does not mean that your family likes to hang out with you, right? Or you with them. They might not be the one you're getting a drink with on Friday night or watching the Super Bowl with. You know, like they might not be the one you're sharing your deepest, darkest secrets with, because, you know, it's like mom. And, oh, you know, I'm not going to tell mom that, right? Like that this is what he's pointing at here. Now, you need to understand, he said this in a culture. He wrote this in a culture that held family relationships up as supreme. They were the most important relationship. And yet he says, despite their importance, don't forget about the necessity of having some good friends. They can offer you things that no other relationship can. Let me explain it to you like this. In most communities, you'll find four different types of love, if you will. There's romantic love, familial love, love for country or civic responsibility, and then there's friendship love. Now, while the Bible affirms the goodness and necessity of all four of these, I've just found that in every single culture, friendship love is always pushed furthest out to the margins, or it's always devalued most and pushed to the bottom of the totem pole. Friendship love never gets to stand in the spotlight. Again, in traditional cultures like the one the Bible was written in, family love is held up as supreme. In more nationalistic or communistic, socialistic cultures, civic responsibility, love for country is held up as supreme. In modern Western individualistic societies like we live in today, romantic love is just idolized, doted over. Okay, think about this. When you're standing in line at the grocery and you look at the magazine wall sitting there, right? Which, you know, you don't look at the magazine wall, right? Or at least you don't get caught looking at the magazine wall because it's just dirty, right? But like, you look at the magazine wall over there, what's plastered all over the front of those magazines? Is it who's best friends with who? No. It's who's sleeping with who, right? Because our culture idolizes it. Let's do something real quick. Let's make a pile on this side of the stage of all the romantic movies and all the romantic songs that have been produced in our lifetime. And then let's make a pile on this side of the stage of all the friendship songs and movies that have been produced. Which pile's bigger? It ain't even close. I mean, can you name me a friendship song? Somebody last service was like, "You got a friend in me." That was a good one. And then one of our staff members pointed out that Christian song from like, I don't know how long it goes ago. "Friends are friends forever." You remember that one? If you listen to the lyrics of that song's just weird, right? But anyways, so you see like the romantic love is just idolized. And yet, I think that if the writer of Proverbs was here, he would look all of us in the eyes and say, yes, romantic love is important. It has its place, but don't forget the necessity of friendship. In fact, I thank God folded friendship into romantic love. Romantic love can spark a relationship, right? Romance can be an adhesive for a relationship over time. But romance alone cannot keep a relationship alive long term, can it? 30, 40, 50 years down the road, heck, 10 years down the road, you better start cultivating friendship and companionship if you want that relationship to work, right? Even in romance, friendship is necessary. And that's the point. That's the first point here. Good friends are absolutely necessary. So don't just push them to the back burner or push them out of your life. All right, second point. This is my favorite point. Good friends speak truth. This is all over the Proverbs. Proverbs says the most about good friends speak truth. Truth. And in a culture that relativizes truth, we need to hear this. Good friends speak truth. You know what I think? I think the reason why most of us don't get to the next level in our relationships and really experience like those rich, life-giving relationships where you feel like, you know, you just got a connection with people is because we won't go the last 10% and speak truth to people. See, here's what folks do. They value their friendship more than the well-being of their friend. Say it again. They value their friendship more than the well-being of their friend. And so, like, they'll see their friend messing up, and instead of calling their friend out, instead of going the last 10% and speaking the truth, they'll just allow their friend to destroy their lives. Because I don't want them to be mad at me. I don't want to lose the friendship. I want them to like me, right? Now, you realize how selfish that is? You're saying, I would rather be liked by you than see you become the person God's created you to be. That's so selfish. That's not a good friend. That's what we call an enabler. And enablers are not good friends. Let me say it to you like this. In a culture that relativizes truth and idolizes tolerance, friendships will tend to be shallow. Very shallow. In fact, think about this. We live in a culture that is more well-connected than ever before, right? Because of these things right here. But we also live in a culture that's lonelier than ever before. Why? Because people won't speak the truth to their friends. Isn't that crazy? We'll speak the truth to the powers that be, right? We'll speak the truth to complete strangers. Get on social media for about 10 seconds. But we won't speak the truth to the people who will probably listen to us best, our friends. Let me give you several examples from the Proverbs of this. Begin in Proverbs 28. Scriptures say, in the end, people appreciate honest criticism far more than flattery. In the end, it might hurt at first, might hurt their feelings a little bit, might make them a little bit angry and make them get defensive because you're not helping them blame it away. You're not helping them justify it. Instead, you're challenging them with truth. But in the end, people will appreciate honest criticism far more than flattery. Proverbs 27:5, an open rebuke is better than hidden love. Wounds from a sincere friend are better than many kisses from an enemy. Proverbs 12:26, the godly give good advice to their friends, while the wicked lead them astray. Proverbs 29, verse 5, to flatter friends is to lay a trap for their feet. Proverbs 27:9, the heartfelt counsel of a friend is as sweet as perfume and incense. Or Proverbs 27:17, it's a good one. As iron sharpens iron, so a friend sharpens a friend. Now, need I go on, right? Couldn't be any clearer. I tell you, over the past 5 years of my life, there's been one friendship that has been perhaps more valuable to me than anyone besides my friendship with my wife and Jesus. And that's my friendship with Bob Cherry, founding pastor of our church. And the reason why that relationship's been so fruitful for me is because from the very beginning, he spoke truth to me. And sometimes I didn't like it, but he spoke truth to me. I remember the first week on the job. I walked into the office on Tuesday. He came up to me and said, Tyler, you're preaching this weekend. I was like, whoa, I was expecting a little bit more of an advance notice. You know, this is my first impression on the congregation. I wanted to really put my best foot forward, but I was, you know, I wanted to be tough. So I was like, oh, yeah, no problem. I'll be ready, you know. So he gave me the topic, and then he put a little more added pressure on me. He said, I want a final manuscript done by the end of the day tomorrow. So now I was like, great. So I went home. Like, I worked literally 24 hours. Like, I hardly slept to try to get that thing to where I wanted to, and I felt like I did. I felt really confident with my manuscript. So at the end of the day, Wednesday, I handed it off to him, and then on Thursday morning, we sat down to talk about it. And when he handed me my manuscript back to me, it looked like he went home the night before and colored on it with a red crayon. I thought he like sacrificed a goat over the manuscript because it was just, it was red all over. And then he proceeded to just rip it apart and tear it to shreds. And I started getting a little bit angry because he's, you know, well, he thought he was speaking truth to me, this old geezer. What does he think he know about preaching? You know, they hired me because I'm a good preacher. And so you know what I did? I didn't listen to a word he said. I went up that weekend and I preached it exactly how I originally wrote it. Now, that caused a little tension in our relationship, but over time, as I came to realize how much Bob loved me and loved the church, my ears opened up more and more and more and more, and he continued to speak truth in my life, and I just began to understand how valuable it was for me. In fact, I know that I wouldn't be the version of Tyler standing in front of you today. And I'm not perfect, don't get me wrong, but I wouldn't be the version of Tyler I am if it wasn't for 5 years of him just pressing truth into my heart, into my life. I'm thankful for that. And you need a friend like that. You do. You need a friend who will speak truth. Heck, if your friends won't speak truth to you, who will? Who will? Your mom will. Your mom, that's probably about it though. And if you're 19, you don't listen to your mom anyways, right? So you need some friends. You need some friends. Now, before I move on from this point, I want to make a few subsequent points on it that I think are super, super practical that maybe you could take home and apply. Here's the first one. If you want some friends who can speak good truth to you, find a few friends who are older than you. Find a few friends who are older than you. Young people, this one is especially for you. You need to find a few friends who are older than you. You see, here's what we have the tendency to do, young folks. We have the tendency to surround ourselves with our peers. Right? If you're in college, you surround yourself with, you know, other college kids. You know, who wear beanies and skinny jeans. If you're a young professional, you hang out with other young professionals. If you're a parent with young kids, you get other parents with young kids around you. And that's good. You're doing life with people in your stage and your age. Good, great, grand, awesome. But sooner or later, here's what's going to happen. You're going to encounter a crossroads in life. Or you're going to encounter a transition moment in life. Or you're going to encounter a tragedy in life. That involves decisions. And if you go to your friend group full of your peers, you may get some good advice, but you might not. Because guess what? They've never been there and done that. They're your peers, right? That's why in that moment, it is amazing to be able to draw on the wisdom of somebody who has. been there and done that. This is why the scriptures associate wisdom with age, because with age comes experience. And an experienced person can share with you mistakes they've made. They can share with you victories along the way. And man, that I've just found that has been very, very, very valuable to me. Hence the reason why I got an old friend in Bob, all right, you know? He's not here. He's globetrotting somewhere, so he didn't hear that. So, hey, look, get you an old friend. That's what I'm saying. Get you an old friend. Don't call him an old friend. Then they won't be your friend. All right, next. Study the Bible with friends. Study the Bible with friends. One of the coolest things about the technological advancements of the last, several years is that you can literally have anything you'd possibly want to study the Bible right here on your phone by just downloading an app or two. That's amazing. Now, one of the sad things, though, about the technological advancements of the past few years is that's what most people do now. They just sit right here with the phone in front of them, and they get alone in the morning, or they get alone in the evening, and they just study all by themselves. Now, you should spend some alone time with God, but let me just be real with you. The Bible wasn't written in order to be consumed alone. In fact, most of the documents in the New Testament were written to be digested in a public forum with other people. So you should be reading the scripture as much with other people as you do by yourself. When you read the scripture with others, it provides accountability, it provides perspective, and it provides protection from making a really, really boneheaded misinterpretation of what you find in the text. So find some friends to read the Bible with. Third and final, always speak the truth in love. When you do get an opportunity to press truth in the life of a friend, make sure you speak the truth in love. We say this a lot around here, but if you speak love without truth, it is not love at all, it's enablement. And if you speak truth without love, well, nobody's going to listen to you because you're a butthead, right? So don't be an enabler, don't be a butthead, be a friend. And good friends speak truth. Third point. You guys with me? First 2 points. Good friends are necessary. Good friends speak truth. Any questions? No? All right. Third. Good friends are committed. Good friends are committed. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 6. Many will say they are loyal friends, but who can find one who's truly reliable, man? Tough to find. Proverbs 18, 24. There are friends who destroy each other, but a real friend sticks closer than a brother. Now, again, remind yourself, in this culture, family relationships, very family-oriented, family relationships were supreme, and yet the Proverbs writer says, if you get the right friend, they can be even closer than a brother. That's real close. The Hebrew word for sticks here is actually translated in other places as clings to or cleaves. It points to a commitment that's forged out of passionate love. Now, the idea of a committed friendship with somebody is something that I think we'd all like. Like, we'd all like to have. It's a good thing. We want that. But the problem is, in our culture, it's hard to do. Because our culture is commitment-phobic, commitment-allergic. Is it not? Okay, just for a few reasons. Like, for one, commitment means time. And in our culture, nobody has time. If you want to forge a committed relationship with somebody, you have to invest time in them. And who has the time for something like that? Because it's like bing, 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 bing. In our culture, we demand everything right now, right? We want instant gratification. If you want that thing right now and you can't afford it, just put it on credit. And you can have it now and pay for it later. In fact, if you want it tomorrow, get it on Amazon and a drone will deliver it on your front door. You want to watch a TV series now? You know, click, purchase, and play. And you can binge the whole season all week long. 16 episodes, the entire weekend. Skip church. Some of you do. Just watch the whole season. You want a date? Swipe right. You got it. I want to fix your body? Do the 2-week cleanse. Take the, pill. Get the surgery. Just boom, boom, boom. We want everything now. And the cool thing about our culture is that it has found a way to deliver everything to you at a quality level and quick, instantly. Well, except for one thing. And that is healthy friendships, healthy relationships. Because you can't microwave a good friendship. Friendships take time. Committed time, quality time, and quality time only comes within the context of a large quantity of time. So you have to invest time. Second, you have to invest energy as well. A committed friendship involves investing energy. One pastor explained it like this once. He said, when you're young, you have high energy and low responsibility. And that gives you a wide margin in order to invest that into some of your relationships. That's why for some of you, your best relationships when you're in like high school or college, like you point back to those and you're like, oh, those are awesome. Those are my best friends. Now, when you get older though, all of a sudden responsibility continues to increase and increase and increase. And you have less margin between your energy and your responsibility. And all of a sudden you have to start making decisions about who's going to get your energy and who's going to get your best hours of the day. And how many is this person or this thing or that thing going to get? Now, here's how many of us prioritize. First, we give our best energy and our best hours to our career, because that's how you forge your identity in our culture, and that's how you provide for your family. Second, you usually give your next best hours to your kids, because you don't want to be a bad parent. I mean, that'll ruin a reputation, right? And so guess what? Guess what gets pushed off to the side? Your two most important relationships, your friendship with your spouse and your friendship with your friends. I want you to think about that for a second. Does your spouse get your best hours or your leftover hours at the end of the day when you're already tired and you just want to crash on the couch? Do your friends get your best hours or do they get any hours at all? Do they get scheduled hours? Do they get tired hours? Like, it takes energy. It takes energy to go on a creative date. Surprise, surprise. It takes energy to have fun. It takes energy to resolve conflict. It takes energy to really, really get to know someone. And so you got to invest it. You can't neglect anything and expect for it to improve. You know that. Can't neglect your health. Can't neglect your job. What makes you think we can neglect our friendships? You got to invest the time. You got to invest the energy. No wonder so many people in our culture feel alone. No wonder. I don't have any friends. Look, it's not you. It's not the people around you. There are some potential friends out there. It's just the way you're managing your time and your energy. All right, last two here, and then we'll move on to the last point. A commitment also means grace and forgiveness. Grace and forgiveness. Let me just say it like this, all right? Every friendship involves two sinners. Two. Okay, now, when friendships usually get sideways is when one of those sinners forgets the fact that they're a sinner or thinks the other sinner is way bigger of a sinner than they are, all right? And so you know what they end up doing? They end up beginning to judge them. They end up beginning, oh, man, it's just too much of a mess. They're too much work. They're too much time. They're too much energy for me. And then they discard a friend as if they're some sort of broken commodity. Now, look, friends aren't commodities. They're people. And all people are broken, including you. God knows you need grace and forgiveness, right? God knows. And so we'd all be better off to just show that to one another. All right. Now, last point. There's your first three. Here's your final one. Good friends help when life gets hard. Fourth, good friends help when life gets hard. Proverbs 27:10. Never abandon a friend, either yours or your father's. When disaster strikes, you won't have to ask your brother for assistance. It's better to go to a neighbor than to a brother who lives far away. Again, the Proverbs writer says that there's something that a friend can offer that even a family member can't. In the times where you're suffering the most, in the times when you're on your last leg, in the times when you need somebody to walk for you because you can't take another step. Man, there's nothing like the love of a friend. It's irreplaceable. Now, instead of me kind of riffing on this for another few minutes, I've asked one of my friends to come up here and share their story with you. So, Rhonda, you can come on out. This is Rhonda Laguna. She's the executive pastor at our church. And I'm going to tell you what, she's my peer in leading this place, and this place would fall apart without her. Especially during this transition season, she's just taken the brunt of the organization on her shoulders and helped us move forward rather than backwards. Now, in the midst of this busy season, though, Rhonda's had a few things that has happened to her family that has made life very, very difficult for her. And if it wasn't for a couple of friends, I'm not sure if she would have got through it on her two feet like she is right now. So I've asked her to share a little bit about that.
Thanks, Tyler. So life for me has always been hard. Being abandoned at the age of four, becoming a foster child and then adopted, and never really feeling like I belonged. An abusive relationship in college, and then later on in life, a very difficult and painful divorce. And because of that, I've spent most of my life pushing people away, especially during difficult times. I didn't need the help of others. I always knew I could get through the difficult times on my own. I always knew my faith was strong, and that was enough to make me strong. When other people get involved, they just cause pain, disappointment, and sometimes even judgment. Sometimes it's just better to keep them out. Now, because of that, I never really had any close friends. I always envied those other girls who had girlfriends to share life with. However, a few months ago, many of you know my family's life was rocked. My son Brandon became gravely ill. We had to bring him home from college, and he was soon hospitalized. And for weeks, the doctors were unable to diagnose exactly what was wrong with him. Every day was full of unexplainable pain. He had lost over 50 pounds in just a few weeks, and gradually we were watching our son fade away. Finally, they found the problem, and we were told he needed emergency surgery. I'll never forget that moment when the doctors rushed into the hospital room to tell his father and I he needed this surgery because his colon had begun to rupture and he was becoming septic. And because he was so anemic and so malnourished, every moment was very critical. My entire world fell apart right then. No one prepares you for the moment when your child may lose their life. No parent should ever have to experience that kind of pain. I immediately called Tyler, and all I remember saying between tears was just pray, please pray. So all the staff gathered around, and they began praying nonstop for Brandon and the surgeons. As we prayed with Brandon and said our goodbyes, and they wheeled him back for surgery, my husband and I broke down not knowing how to handle this kind of pain. Feeling so alone and helpless to do anything, and for 7 hours, everyone prayed and comforted us as we waited. That 7 hours felt like eternity. And thankfully, the surgery worked, but there was still a long road to recovery ahead. Now, I've always known prayer is a powerful thing. I've always leaned very hard on my prayer life, but it was at this moment I knew God was using all that prayer to send us more than just healing for Brandon. He sent us friends, much-needed friends in our lives, something we weren't used to, something we had always pushed away. For the next 30 days, as Brandon was in the hospital, there were two ladies, who I now call my friends, who literally put their lives on hold to ensure that our needs were met. And as a mother, I refused to leave Brandon's side. I slept by his bed. I held his hand. I skipped meals. I worked from the hospital room. I couldn't leave him. You see, he was going through what any 20-year-old should never have to go through. Brandon was scared, and he was dealing with anxiety he had never had to deal with before. He needed his mom so that he never felt alone through this journey. But you see, I'm also a wife, I'm a mother of three other kids, and I had the responsibility here as your executive pastor. I felt guilty for ignoring these roles to care for Brandon. But these ladies took care of everything. They knew based on my personality I would never ask, so they just did it. It seemed like every time I stepped out of Brandon's room, there they were in the waiting room praying, ready to offer words of encouragement and asking me how they could help. These ladies made sure we had Thanksgiving, and they ate dinner with my family so that I could be with Brandon. These ladies brought me fresh clothes. These ladies checked backpacks for homework for my girls so they wouldn't get behind, and sometimes even helped them with their homework. These ladies stayed with my girls so my husband could be with me at times. They made sure I was sleeping, eating, and even taking my own medicine. Then they let me break down and get emotional and sometimes even angry. And they did not hold it against me, nor did they look at me any less. These ladies orchestrated a meal train to ensure that my family was eating. These ladies literally took over all our needs at that time. It was December, so they orchestrated some staff to put Christmas lights up on our house for my girls. They took my teenage daughter to pick out a Christmas tree. These ladies know that Brandon has a long way to go, and they continue to be there each step of the way. I still find out things today that they've done for me, and I wonder, what did I do to deserve such great friends? So, church, I can now say I have friendships that I never thought I would have. Friendships that have no judgment. Friendships that hold me up when I am weak. Friendships that genuinely love me for who I am, flaws and all. Friendships that hold me accountable. And friendships that can be strong for me when I have no strength left to give. So today, I want to thank my friends, Jess and Shauna. You two have truly shown me what it means to have true friends. I only wish I had grasped this years ago. I do believe that Jesus shows up in our lives through people he puts around us. Jess and Shauna, you ladies have walked through this journey with me as a mom, and words could never express the gratitude I have towards you. 1 Thessalonians 5:11 says, "Therefore, encourage one another and build up one another, just as you are doing." Shauna and Jess, thanks for the constant encouragement and building me up during this journey. Thank you.
Thanks, Rhonda. Love what she said there at the end. Sometimes when we need Jesus, in fact, oftentimes when we need Jesus, he sends a friend. So here's my homework for you this week. One, I would challenge you, for those of you who haven't connected with other friends who are bonded in the Holy Spirit with you and living in Christ, other folks who you can go next level with your faith and with your life and who will hold you accountable, can I just challenge you, would you consider getting a part of a small group at our church? A small group is exactly what it sounds like. It's a small group of people that are a part of this church family that will hold one another accountable, read the scriptures together, care for each other, and just have fun and do life with you. The church should be the best place on the planet Earth to find friends. I believe that. And that's because we believe these principles that we just talked about for the last 30 minutes. And so I would just challenge you, I would welcome you to find some good life-giving friends here. Now, for those of you who already have a group of Christian friends who surround you and help carry you and do life with you, would you just do me a favor? Would you pick one principle, just one principle? It could have been a main point or a sub point from this message. And I would challenge you, be intentional over the next month about applying that to your friendships. All right, let me close today by saying this. And I know it may sound cliche, but no matter how lonely you are or friendless you may feel today, you do have one friend. I can guarantee that. You have a friend in Jesus. I want you to think about this. When God chose to fully reveal himself to the world, he didn't do it in a pillar of fire. He didn't do it in a cloud in the sky. He didn't do it in another burning bush or a plague or a storm or a rushing wind. He didn't do it as a military commander with legions of angels behind him or a king on a throne. He didn't do it as a judge with a gavel. No, when God fully revealed himself to us, he did it as a friend. In John chapter 15, just before Jesus is crucified, he looks at his disciples and he says, "Greater love has no person than when someone lays their life down for a friend." And then he called them his friends, and then he showed them how much their friendships mattered to him. So again, can I just say this again? You have a friend in Jesus, y'all. He will speak the truth to you. In fact, the scriptures tell us that truth is not a power or a principle, it is a person. So he is the truth. He had no problem in his ministry speaking the truth to everyone, to the poor, to the rich, to the weak, to the dying, to the most heinous sinners, to capital criminals, to religious people, to the rulers of his day. He spoke the truth, and he'll speak the truth to you. He'll remain committed to you, even when you're not committed to him. And so many of us are not committed to him. Like, I find myself daily failing in my commitment to him. I feel like the disciples the night before he's betrayed, just falling asleep when he's begging me to stay awake. I feel like disciples promising him, "I'll never abandon you," and then running at the first sign of danger or difficulty, betraying him in the moment that he needs him the most. But look, he does not betray us in return. Rather, he pours out all of his energy for us. And I'll tell you this, you better believe that he's there for you when life gets hard. I mean, if Jesus was willing to walk into the ultimate suffering for you, you know, he's walking in your daily sufferings with you, day in and day out. So look, if life is about who you're doing with, okay, if life is less about what you're doing and more about who you're walking through life with, I would just challenge you, don't miss the opportunity to walk through life with Jesus. Heavenly Father, thank you for the friend we have in him. Let him be our model for friendship as we try to connect and love people around us better. And let us feel the love of his friendship with us. Fill lonely hearts. Pull lost souls toward our great friend in Jesus today. It's in his name that we pray, amen. Steve.
You know, one of the things I just want to tell you real quickly, one of the things that we really value here at Northeast is that we don't just become a people who hear the word, but we become people who do the word, respond to it. And it's important to us. I know it's something that Tyler feels very passionate about, that you have a chance to respond to whatever's been taught from this stage. So I just want to tell you real quickly that as soon as the service is over, we're going to do this every Sunday, every weekend. If you'd like to talk to somebody about what you've heard today, maybe it's about, you know, establishing a friendship with Jesus Christ, maybe just life's really difficult right now, and you need somebody to listen to you and just pray with you. Tell you what you do. As soon as the service is over, walk out the doors here and go to the left. There's a glass enclosed room called the fireside room right across from the main entrance of the nursery there. And we'll have that staffed with elders and pastors. And that's just a great place to stop in for a moment. Let somebody be with you, listen to you, pray with you, and we'd be honored to do that. So just think about stopping in there today if that's something you need. We're glad you came today. Have a great day.